This is a Marketplace podcast special. I'm Kai Rizdal. A year ago this month, pro-democracy activists in the Middle East began a series of protests, starting in Tunisia and quickly spreading to Egypt, Libya, and throughout the region. Clashes between protesters and soldiers often turned deadly. Yet the demonstrations managed to uproot decades-old military dictatorships and triggered a wave of activism that swept the world. One of the organizers in Cairo, in Tahrir Square, was Ahmed Naguib. I spoke with him and to Tammy Shapiro from the Occupy movement in New York about the common ground that their movements share and where activists in Egypt and the U.S. go from here. Ahmed, Tammy, thank you for being with us.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Ahmed, let me ask you, first of all, setting aside the obvious political connotations of what happened last year in Cairo, how much of what happened in the Arab Spring was about the economy and about economic justice?
Well, on the 25th of January, the first thing that people started chanting on the streets with was Aish Hurriya Adala Ijtimaiya, which means Aish is bread, Hurriya is freedom, and Adala Ijtimaiya is social justice. So definitely the rate of unemployment was soaring high. And at the same time, people have not been receiving their services as, you know, as they should. The government was not delivering properly anymore. The gap between the have and have-nots have been increasing dramatically and significantly. Over 40% of the population's under poverty line, and then 20% barely make ends meet. And the rest is, again, there's a disparity between, discrepancy between the distribution of wealth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that Tammy Shapiro, that is what it seems to me Occupy Wall Street came to represent, was that unequal distribution of wealth, right? Were you guys looking at the Arab Spring and saying, you know what, they got something here. We need to capitalize on this.
I think it's not that clear of a direct connection. I think there's a lot of inspiration that we got while we saw movements across the world and even in our own country springing up. But I think that what sparked Occupy Wall Street was looking at that the economic system wasn't working for us. So it was both about economic justice and also thinking about how the system itself is broken and only works for a few.
Yeah, and it's a very few, right? I mean, that's where you were going with the 99% thing. We are the 99%.
Yeah, absolutely. That the system, both the political system and the economic system, there's a few at the very top who are running the show, who get to say and have influence over the way that our country works, over who has and who doesn't have, and how the system distributes that.
Ahmed Naguib in Cairo, when you looked at Occupy Wall Street and when you saw that happening last fall in New York and then across this country, what were you thinking?
I was thinking good for them, because I believe that our generation is all about change. I don't know if you believe what people call the pseudoscience of indigo generation, but I truly believe that we were being brought up for this moment. And I don't see what's happening in the States, nor Greece, nor Spain, or other countries in Europe, and even India and this Arab Spring as detached. I personally believe what Tammy was saying about the few that was benefiting from it. But if you take it from the macro perspective and you look at what happened in 1989 with the fall of Soviet Union and what the Fortune 500 or the cartels of the world of the oil sectors and the weapon and arms industries, you'll see that the New World Order was an agenda for the world to consume and consume more with a detached from their humanity. And what we're seeing now is nothing but an effort to counter those New World Orders that was pushed upon us or imposed upon us in the past 20 to 30 years. So in essence, we're all after the same thing. You know, those bankers and politicians that failed us and has increased, the margins of poverty all around the world. We need to fix that system.
Tammy Shapiro, that line he just said, we're all after the same thing. You agree with that?
I think we are. I think that there is a global economic system that isn't working for the 99% in America, and it's certainly not working for the 99% around the world. I think our struggles look different. They have different flavors to them. But at the end of the day, we're working for a system that works for everybody and that fights for equality for everyone.
You are part of this sort of outgrowth of Occupy called InterOccupy, where you're sort of coordinating around the world, Tammy. And I wonder how you do that. How do you make this message resonate in so many different cultures and places and economic systems?
Sure. Well, just to clarify, InterOccupy is a network of creates channels of communication between occupations, and in some cases around the world. So we aren't coordinating. We're creating the channels of communication for other people to coordinate through. And so I think the way that it resonates is everybody has a chance to have their voice heard, and people are saying different things. Some people are talking about, for instance, on Friday, there's Occupy the Courts to overturn corporate personhood and to fight against Citizens United on the two-year anniversary. And that is one struggle we're seeing. And then there's people who are thinking about what an economy could look like post-capitalism. So there's people having different conversations through these channels, and I think that's what makes it resonate, is that everybody's voice and everybody's ideas are welcome as we're thinking about how to fight for justice together.
Ahmed, this is a little bit sideways, but it occurs to me that the Occupy movement here really hit on something. They hit on a thing that resonated, and they figured out a way to, and this is not cynical at all, they figured out a way to market it, right? They've got the slogan of "We are the 99%, and they've got this idea of Occupy. Is there the same thing in the Arab Spring and happening across that part of the world? I mean, I should know, but I don't.
Well, actually, I see that the Occupy movement has much bigger challenges to mobilize people across a nationwide. You know, the States is a continent. It's not just a country. And you have people from all sorts of different backgrounds and ideological backgrounds. So it's very hard to mobilize a million man's march like we do it every Friday. It's become more of a custom and a tradition to gather millions of people in Tahrir Square on Fridays. We have a million man's march on Friday tomorrow. So to mobilize enough people, it takes some effort, but it shows you the strength of this movement. It's very, I think it's much harder for the Occupy movement because you have a nation that is so huge and so decentralized in many ways. It's very hard to get the nation behind you on such a cause. But I think they're doing pretty good for the time being. And I think people are starting to identify more and more. I think it's about targeting your people that you want to mobilize and the techniques and tools that you need to use for that.
Yeah. So Tammy, what happens now? I mean, that challenge he speaks of is not insignificant.
Yeah, I think that something that's important to name is that in this country, there's a lot of people who are unemployed. Unemployment has been a problem for several years. There are people who are losing their homes, but there are also people who are doing okay. And in order to really build a mass-based movement, everybody needs to see that the system isn't working. And so I think the challenge that we face is making it clear to everybody, to the 99%, or really the 99.5%, which is really the percentage we're speaking about here. And our job and our challenge is to make it clear that even though perhaps people are doing okay, they have a house, they have potentially jobs, we're still in a system that isn't really working for us the way that it should be. So I think part of it is a lot of education, a lot of explanation, a lot of having people share their stories, and also educating people about the system itself and about the ways that it doesn't work for us.
Ahmed, the people Tammy was talking about, the ones who are doing okay in this country, are you finding in Egypt and across the Middle East that the people who are doing okay are interested in what the democracy activists are saying?
To some extent, yes. And I agree with everything that Tammy said. And before I jump to what's happening in Egypt, and I think Americans always responded to fear more than agreement. Unfortunately, it has been used against this nation for so long in internal politics. But one thing you can capitalize on is that you tell people, if you do not, you know, back this movement, you're next. Your home is going to be taken away from you. Your great job is going to be taken away from you because those politicians are not thinking of your own interest, or those bankers are not thinking of your own welfare. So it's important to capitalize on the threats. You know, people are distant from the Occupy movement yet because they don't see their interest at stake. So that's important for the Occupy movement to something to capitalize on. As for Egypt,
hang on a second, because I'll hang on one second, Ahmed, because I want to get Tammy's thoughts on that and the idea that a way to capitalize on what people are fearing might be beneficial to you?
Well, I think that, you know, I think there's different minds in the movement. There are certainly people who say the worse things get, the larger our movement will grow. And, you know, small reforms that pacify people aren't actually helping us in the long run. There are people who think that. And there are other people who think that the worse things get, the worse things will get. And we won't be able to build a movement, and people won't have the freedom to fight. So I think there's people that have different opinions, and I'm not exactly sure where I fall on that. But I do think that what sparked this movement, what sparked this moment, was that so many people were suffering and so many people are scared of what happens next. And there is a sense that a lot of people need to get to desperation before they're willing to stand up and put everything on the line. And a lot of people in the Occupy movement have put everything on the line. People don't have jobs. A lot of people have left their homes and really are putting everything into this movement. And I think that the more scared people are of what comes next, the more people are willing to do that.
All right, Ahmed Naguib in Cairo, back to you and this question of the 1% in the Middle East. Are you able to engage them? Do your problems resonate with them?
Well, a lot of people ask me in Tahrir Square, I mean, you look like from a decent and good background, great education, you have a great job. What made you go down on the street? Huh. And I respond to them exactly like this. I tell them that the day on the 28th of the Friday of Anger, I took both my little kids, 7 and 5, into my arms and I kissed them. And I wanted them to hear maybe my last words to them, which is, I'm going out to get you a better tomorrow. Because it's not just because I'm doing well that I sit back and enjoy the fruits of my labor and the rest of my country is oppressed, repressed, and is hopeless and desperate. I cannot live in a country where people are violated, don't feel safe, there's no democracy, there's no freedom. It's not just about economic benefit or welfare. There's so much that needs to be fixed in this country. So it's an issue of social justice. You know, it's a value. I think what differentiates us in the East than from the West is that we're still in the lower part of the food chain when it comes to democracy, freedom, and civil rights. So we have more to fight for. To engage those 1% and you tell them, take away bureaucracy and take away corruption, we could do way much better. Egypt was projected in a HSBC economic report in 2010 to be one of 20 emerging economies that's going to be very important to the world. That was according to a 2010 before the revolution. And that means take away corruption and bureaucracy. We could be one of the top 5 emerging economies, not just top 20. So if you tell them that they can do much better in a thriving, liberal, open society and government, they will definitely buy into that, knowing that they're doing the right thing as well.
One more thing before I let you both go, and I'll let whoever has a better idea answer first. How might you work together? Do you see a point, Tammy, where you might, you know, get Ahmed on the line and say, listen, we're thinking of this, this, and this. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've spoken with some Egyptian activists in the past, and we've strategized how can we help each other out. And really, the way that we can help each other out is by succeeding as much as possible in our respective movements. But I think there's still a lot of room for being in communication. I wouldn't say being in communication and in some places coordination. So there's global days of action that are coming up. And I think we certainly make a bigger statement when we're taking action all over the world on the same day with a similar message. And so I think there's a lot of room to do things like that in the future. And I think that we can also learn from each other. There's a lot we can learn from the Egyptian revolution in terms of their street tactics, in terms of their messaging, in terms of reaching out to people. And I think that in the Occupy movement, we really need to be humble and learn from the people who are trying things out all over the world.
Well, I can't agree more. Tammy's got it all. But what I would add is something more on the conceptual level is that this connection is very crucial and important. And if we go out on the same day with the same message all around the world, this is the strongest message we could carry. Those people who are up high there in their ivory towers thinking they're controlling the world, well, guess what? the matrix is falling down and it's collapsing from the inside, and we're there watching you. These are the last words of Neo in the Matrix in part one. So I think we're just in part one of the Matrix right now.
American pop culture spreads around the world.
And I want to add something, Kai, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
There are also specific campaigns happening out of the Occupy movement, focusing on tear gas that's used in Egypt. So tear gas that's bought from America and the military connected. Exactly, from an American company, and protesting both that tear gas and also the connection between the American government and the Egyptian military. So there's very concrete things also happening in terms of how, as Americans in the center of power, really, of the world, how can we be protesting real things that are happening here and now?
So, Tammy, when you despair, right, as you must in any movement like this that faces difficult odds, what do you do?
That's a great question. I think that one thing I always do is remember that what we've accomplished so far is great. Right? We've been able to change a conversation. We've been able to impact a lot of people's thoughts on the way that the country works and the way the world works. So I try to remember that we've already accomplished quite a lot. And then I also try to remember that there's so much to do that even what I now consider to be a small win is huge and something I couldn't have even imagined 6 months ago. So I think that those are some of the things I try to remember when I'm feeling frustrated or when things are challenging.
Ahmed, do you still, when you go to a protest or when you go to a meeting, do you still hug your kids goodbye and offer what could be your last thoughts to them?
Yeah, it's been on a daily basis almost. It's been a roller coaster ride, to tell you the truth. I just, two months ago, I got injured. And because I'm diabetic, it developed badly. And, you know, my life has been on always at risk because I've been on national television many times and international press as well, criticizing severely and heavily criticizing the military council. So I don't care because I'm a believer. I think to hug my kids and tell them I'm bringing you a better tomorrow, if they remember this when they grow, they're not going to take anything face value. In fact, to end up on a positive note, my wife always reads a story, a bedtime story to my kids. And one of them quickly ran to the toilet and she paused until he returned. So the 7-year-old told her the people want the story to continue. And he looked at her and told her, by the way, these are protests. And I think this is an amazing, strong message. It's not just funny, but it's amazing that this culture is going to be embedded in those kids' thoughts and you know, tendencies to question everything. So I think we have a better future already.
Yeah, I was talking to someone the other day, and she was telling me how her 4-year-old brought a bunch of chairs into the kitchen, put sheets over them, sat under them, and said, "I'm occupying the kitchen." And I just thought that's amazing that 4-year-olds are thinking about that. And that they have the ability to sort of stand up, right? And I want to say one other thing, which is I think an important difference is the violence that we face. You know, I think that people in Egypt are really putting their lives on the line. And while some folks in the Occupy movement are putting their future on the line or, you know, dropping everything and we don't know where things are going to go, we're not facing the same kind of violence and repression. And I think it's really important to name that and to be in complete solidarity and support of our Egyptian brothers and sisters who really are putting their lives on the line.
Ahmed Naguib in Cairo, who's a pro-democracy activist there. Tammy Shapiro in New York City with the Occupy movement. Thank you both.
Thank you. That was lovely.
Thanks for having me.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Soul to Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Soul to Story are available now.